This is my comprehensive daily schedule and list of regulations. It's quite simple. You're never to divert one iota from my plans. I must live my life with total efficiency to maximize my inventing capacity, thus enabling me to do the most I can for mankind.
Mr. Fong, you are a noble, precise gentleman.
You're a nutcase. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 339, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian, kind of racist no matter where they go, Dunaway.
Oh, hi. As you guys know, I have a wife for every day of the week. All right, you might not know that, but I do. But good news, I've decided to divorce Tuesday, wife, for more sacking. Viva la Film Sack. Now, if you'll excuse me, I want to go use some of my free time to go urinate in public and reattach this man's nipples. Don't worry.
Nice.
I'm going to wash my hands before and after each, because otherwise that would be gross. Lord Salisbury, stop pointing at my thinker.
By the way, it's the nipples on Robert Baratheon from Game of Thrones, which is pretty great.
Or lack thereof nipples.
Yeah, no kidding. Also with us, Randy, Steve Coogan makes me think he, let me start that again. It's Randy, Steve Coogan makes me think he's the only British guy with good teeth, Jordan.
Wow. Hey, Scott, Brian.
Hi.
Mm-hmm. Did I ever tell you guys about the time I was a member of the Royal Society Academy of Science?
No.
That's a true story, which is kind of remarkable given that I'm not British and I don't have any PhDs. Still, you can get along just fine in the Royal Society as long as you follow these three rules for scientists. Number one, don't actually do any science. Hell, you should probably come off as though you outright dislike science and don't want there to be any science in the Royal Academy. Two, take up vital matters from other organizations that you have nothing to do with. Was there a bank robbery? Shouldn't that be entirely a matter for the Metropolitan Police Service? No, the Royal Society will take care of it. Number three, life is a game of rumors, man. That's how you do science. And I should know, I'm a French-Englishman with multiple PhDs.
Right.
Nice.
The whisper game.
Yeah, indeed.
My favorite.
Also with us, Brian, Passport 1, Ibbit.
Oh, I'm looking up the original.
Yeah.
When you've got a movie that feels like it actually takes 80 days to watch, your mind starts to wander a little bit. So here's what I think happened. Blah, 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 fly away in a balloon. Jackie Chan performs a perfect dragon double punch and KOs the King of Siam, and then executes a cobra finger throat swaffling on Russian Federation Olympic judge Boris Chemenko. Well, bam! And then Asian Lady Gaga under Katamari Damacy hairdo throws a knife into Jackie Chan's butt in the Statue of Liberty. And then I got a triple word score on Rutabaga and Words with Friends.
Nice,
just
nice.
Kidding. I was asleep.
Oh. You read that really well, man.
That was complicated.
Yeah, I'm impressed. No flubs at all in that. All right, so it's Around the World in 80 Days, you guys. That's the movie. It's kind of a piece of shit. It's not.
But it's kind of fun.
No,
right?
Now hold on. What do you expect from the director of most of the bad Adam Sandler movies, like The Water Boy? And
well, I expected a Rob Schneider cameo. Oh, you got it.
You got one.
Nobody expects a Rob Schneider cameo.
I did kind of expect him to say, you can do it.
He didn't do that.
I noticed that. Okay. I have the best piece of cool stuff to tell you guys. So as I'm doing like this, you know, night before viewing and putting up screen caps and GIFs on the internet on the Twitter account,
which I love,
it's pretty fun. I get this tweet from David Goldstein, who says, okay. I'm really excited you guys are finally doing this movie. I was one of the writers.
What?
And I went and looked, and sure enough, one of the screenwriters is David Goldstein. He later says, He sends this tweet and says, many crazy facts about this film, such as the role Arnold played was originally written for Adam Sandler. Prince Happy was to be connected with Happy Gilmore, which is awesome. And I kind of wish that would have happened, sort of, because that was a kind of a terrible Arnold moment, I thought.
This was Arnold's last movie appearance before he became the Governator.
Yeah, it was Governor. Yeah. I remember that in 04 being talked about, like, oh, this is the last thing you'll see him in before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
before his deal. And I remember not seeing this. This is first time for everybody, or did everybody
first
see
time
it?
For me
first no. time yeah
I've right. seen this movie before. This is a childhood favorite of my kids. We've watched this many times. It's a lot of fun.
Let's define fun. Can we define fun out of the gate?
Sure.
Because it's not. I understand where you're coming from, and I actually can understand where kids would be into this. This reminded me of Hook. And it had all the same problems that I don't like Hook for, but I can see why, if you are a kid during Hook or during this, that you just think it was great. I can totally see that. But I think if you are, let's say, 22 or older, when you see this movie or Hook or I think the original Jumanji kind of has this problem. I don't know quite how to define it. The follow up. I'll give you a modern example. The Lone Ranger movie.
Yes.
Is this. Right.
That's exactly what I was thinking about.
Yeah, that's also a lot of fun for me as well.
Ugh. And look, we may as well. I'll throw in Star Wars Episode One.
Yeah.
It's a movie because this is a movie that is perfectly fine if you're seeing it for the first time and you haven't seen other movies that it's going to remind you of, and you're 11 years old.
Yeah.
It's perfectly fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's
Episode One. I'm absolutely certain there are 19-year-olds right now who saw Episode One when they were six and are like, well, it's fine. What's the problem?
Absolutely agreed with that.
No question about that. I think I think there's a place for that. I don't want to besmirch anybody's, you know, fondness for Around the World in 80 Days with Jackie Chan and Steve Coogan. In fact, I remember when trailers hit in 04, 03, whatever it was, when I'd see trailers that made me go, oh, this looks like fun. I could get into this. Mm-hmm. Here's the problem. I thought this movie was all about a dude in a giant airship the whole time.
I did too. Oh. I totally did too. Yeah. I honestly have it in my notes. I honestly thought this movie took place in the balloon the entire damn time.
Yeah.
How exciting is this going to be? It's day 72 of us sitting here in this balloon.
Right. I didn't know there was any ground travel. I didn't know about any of that. And I thought, and I think where I've gotten confused is I've confused it with that Terry Gilliam movie, Dr. Parnassus and his 400 women, or whatever it's called. What's the name of that movie?
The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
That's the Imaginarium one. That's it. And we've seen that. Is that a thing we've done?
No, we haven't seen that.
I might even still have the name wrong. I'm looking it up right now.
Right.
It's Dr. No. Something and 1,000 Chickens. Whatever it is.
1,000 Chickens.
I actually did have it right. The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Yes, that's the one I'm confusing this with.
I was thinking it was Wondermagorium of Professor DeLorean or whatever.
No, that's close. Mr. Wonder Emporium. Oh, what the crap is it?
Mr. Wonder's Emporium of DeLoreans? What?
Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium?
Yeah. I thought that was actually pretty fun as well.
I would go to an Emporium of DeLoreans. That'd be cool.
But we haven't gotten the title right yet, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Mr. Magorium's Wonder
Emporium.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But this entire thing was, I thought that. So I went in going, well, Jackie Chan's a weird pick because he's just going to be in a ship. He's not going to fight or whatever. And here's mm-hmm. the one thing I'll say.
Fighting
so
birds.
As somebody who's not a kid who's seeing this and who doesn't have the perspective of, you know, a very young person who's just being wowed by the visuals and the slapstick humor and all of that, the Jackie Chan fights were all right, considering that most modern American Jackie Chan movies are kind of terrible with the fights. Like, they're not at all reminiscent of his work in Hong Kong, like, at all, and they're safe and they're careful and all of that. This had like a lot of gnarly stuff in it, and it almost had me thinking, ooh, at the end of this movie, am I gonna get to see a reel of him getting hurt like we do mm-hmm. in those, like, Rumble in the Bronx and that kind of stuff? So I was all excited about that.
This is a Disney film. They probably was like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and I thought the script was perfectly fine, but all of the things that I was seeing didn't work together, you know. So, like, I was constantly thinking, oh, wow, they could have found someone much more appropriate to carry this movie than Steve Coogan. And gosh, I wish that these, I wish that this was just a Jackie Chan movie. I had that thought over and over. I wish this was just a Jackie Chan movie. Like, I wish he had been every character, really. I mean, he was like, instead, I got the parts of Jackie Chan movies that I don't like, you know, which are him being a dumb liar. I don't like it when he is playing a dumb liar, or just, and that's kind of
what he does here.
Or just reduced to being like a sidekick. Like I don't need that in my Jackie Chan life. I need him to be.
He's the third wheel in the love triangle.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I'm going to go just the opposite of Randy. I'm going to say that I would have enjoyed this movie more if Jackie Chan had not been in it and Steve Coogan was more the focus. I think maybe just the chemistry between the two maybe just didn't work.
I thought about that. Steve Coogan could have been what's his name from Rush Hour?
Chris Tucker?
Chris Tucker could have been the British scientist. I'm just kidding. That's the horrible idea.
I'm starting to kind of like this a little bit more now.
I would have enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Totally same thing. Like, you know, you hear about this movie, and again, if you haven't seen any of the other iterations of Around the World in 80 Days or read the book, you know, like Scott and I thought, the whole thing took place in a balloon. And I honestly thought Jackie Chan was the Phineas Fogg character before I started watching. Like,
Which would make more sense instead of everything in America and the world being powered by Chinamen, which is kind of what they were saying to this. It's like,
underground network. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's also kind of, I mean, I mentioned at the top of the show, but everywhere they went, it was like stereotype city junior, you know, everywhere. Like, here's stereotypic San Francisco, even with gunshots at that time.
Do you have any misunderstandings about what it's like in Paris? We will put them out in front of you.
This guy's got a curly mustache and talks with a horrible accent.
Wasn't it fun to see that over the top, just flat out dumbness? I mean, when that French, the older French lady was chasing after Jackie Chan, who stole her bag and does that face plant. Something about to that me, whole.
To me, it's like 2004 vaudeville. It's like vaudeville is what it reminds me of.
We were in a weird place in 2004.
Were we,
look
though?
At the movies. Look at the movies that were being put out in 2004. I mean, there's a lot of.
Well, you're coming off Lord of the Rings. You're coming off Lord of the Rings. That year, you had The Incredibles, one of the best animated films of all time.
Right.
You had. Let's see what else.
A lot of sad movies. My memory of 2004 was sad movies like Million Dollar Baby, Eternal Sunshine, Sideways, The Passion of the Christ was that year, and that's a terribly sad and difficult movie to watch, you know, and so on. Like, that's my memory of it. So I get going against that grain, but there was, you know, there was the Iraq War happening, and this just, I can't imagine seeing this in 2004. I'm glad we waited. I'm sure I would have hated it.
Well, I can't imagine seeing this in the theater where I couldn't, like, pause and we could leave for a minute.
Yeah. There would have been some public urination for sure, right? Yeah.
You know what was 2000? The Notebook was 2004. Has there ever been a movie that made you more depressed?
Well, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and all that stuff.
I've never seen Notebook either, Brian. We should celebrate the fact that you and I avoided that.
Maybe we should watch a movie like that for film sex these times, just as an experiment.
Like, like one of the rom-coms, the sad
rom-coms.
The Lake
House.
The Lake House. That would be fun.
One with the magic time traveling mailbox.
That's the Lake House.
I would love to watch
Keanu
that
Reeves sack. And Kate Bush. What's wrong with my brain? Sandra Bullock.
I want to hear the saddest movie you've actually seen. Then, if you haven't seen The Notebook, and I'm not going to say that's the saddest movie I've ever seen either.
Anything by him is going to be sad. I mean, everything that comes out of.
A Picoult? No.
What's his face? No. What's his name?
Larry Petzerforth. I don't know.
That's it. Larry Petzerforth.
So here's
Nick Sparks.
Nicholas Sparks. That's right.
See Nicholas Sparks attached to a movie, you might as well go ahead and bring the Kleenex because somebody's died.
If you're asking me the one that left me the saddest, I'm probably going to defer to a childhood movie that. Probably now, if I watched it, I wouldn't think it was quite as sad. But there's a movie, an old movie from very young in my childhood called Savannah Smiles. Savannah Smiles is about a kidnapping of this little girl who ends up becoming endeared to the kidnappers.
I haven't heard that in forever.
They have to give her up eventually because, you know, they get caught. They're going to be thrown in prison for kidnapping a kid. but she kind of got attached to them. They got attached to her, and it's the saddest movie. It's just such a heartbreaker. And of course, it had this air of innocence too, because these kidnappers were. It was all about the money. See, we're going to kidnap this kid, and then the dad, the rich dad, will pay us the money. See, like it wasn't yeah, like creepy or weird, or like they were going to send her into the sex business or something weird like that. It was just like straight up, like an old fashioned kidnapping.
Right.
And I want to see that thing just made me. I mean, I remember as a kid just bawling my eyes out in that movie. But if I'm looking at modern, more of a modern example, probably Philadelphia got me pretty good.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good mm-hmm. one.
That is a good one.
You said modern. Right?
I'm having a hard time thinking of anything before Manchester by the Sea that I thought was because I never saw. I hear Blue Valentine is one just to avoid if you ever want to be happy again.
Right. Yeah, that one, that's a tough watch. I've seen that one. That's a tough watch.
Is that because you make the choice to avoid movies that you've heard are sad? Like, do you?
No. Oh, no. No, actually, I don't mind. I really enjoyed Manchester by the Sea. So there's.
I didn't even know that was sad.
And like,
the saddest movie of all time in the middle.
Okay,
of,
so like, have you seen? Then is it just that you haven't like you haven't seen Million Dollar Baby? You haven't seen Love Story?
I saw Million Dollar Baby. Didn't think it was.
That's only sad for like about half a minute, right?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, no! Million Dollar Baby is crushing people.
Yeah,
people
at the end,
you have to take drugs to get out of the depression.
You get a good journey until the very end, you know.
Oh, no.
You have to take
drugs. You
want to
talk about a sad movie from beginning to end? Watch A Monster Calls. It's a new one.
Okay.
I haven't heard of that.
It's beautiful, and it deals with some very serious subject matter, and it is tough.
Wow. Look what a movie as silly and flighty and dumb as 80 Days does to make us think of these.
I'll tell you, because it's the contrast, right? And also the time it came out. Like, while this movie was being made, while this movie was in theaters, Ang Lee was off making what I consider the saddest movie ever, which is Brokeback Mountain. Mm-hmm. And to think that those were sort of contemporary films, right? Yeah. Around the world in 80 Days at Brokeback Mountain were kind of, I'll bet you there was a theater that was showing them both at the same time at some point later that year.
I think you're hitting on something. The reason I don't like this movie and the reason I didn't like the Lone Ranger movie and the reason I didn't like Hook, there's nothing at stake. Like there's just, it's just like every time they'd land in a new place and I'd go, here's what my brain would do. I'd go, dysentery, infotigo, y'all are going to die. You're going to get diarrhea and die. Good luck to you. But then they would just be, it would just be a happy, good time in some part of the world where nobody should be. And then they would move to the next place and it was just doop a doop a doo, bonking heads and having fun. Like it's just, there's nothing at stake. It doesn't feel real. It feels like a fairy tale in the worst sort of way. Even real fairy tales had grim circumstances, right? Like it was
but
grim.
This is less about the wager and more about the risk of friendship loss and friendship, you know, and love loss. That's the real.
Yeah, but they're cartoon characters. They're just so two-dimensional. There's nothing. There's no meat or depth to them.
Right.
Yeah. And they try to force some of that in with like, oh, look, Jackie Chan's got a rich heritage here. His family's a bunch of, they're all into it, man. Look at them all worshiping the shrine and clapping after. And like they're really into it, right? So they're trying to establish him.
Good darn look at them.
And they're all drunks, apparently, just sitting around the table drinking whatever the hell that was.
Just grandma. Just grandma.
Yeah, and that crazy old man that kept talking too much and all that.
He was trying to give a speech. By the way, he had the most convenient storytelling dresser of anybody in any movie ever. Phileas Fogg just went straight in there, and it's like everything that he needed to know was right there on that on Grandpa's disc.
Is it Phileas Fogg or Phineas Fogg?
Phileas.
Yeah. Yeah, Phileas Fogg. I always get that confused. I want to say it's Phineas.
Right. This is the only place you ever hear the name Phileas, but Phineas you hear all the time. Well, not all the time, but like in old times, like old circus days. Ah, Phineas.
Everyone pay attention to the center ring where Phineas will come out and do a thing. Yeah, I didn't mean to rhyme that. But the point is, like, it's just silly and light, and that's fine. I'm not saying there's not a place for it, but do we have to go 2 full hours, man?
Like, yeah, that was tough. And the reason why is because they had 2 full stories. They had Jackie Chan's story, which they wrapped up in 1 hour and 20. And then you had another 40 minutes of Phileas,
which is weird. I thought it was very deftly handled, but I felt like the whole time I was like, oh, I don't really actually need the subplot to be a full plot, you know?
Yeah.
So I had to decide for myself which of these two plots.
I'm okay.
Good. No, we're just making sure you're all right. Sorry, Randy. Continue.
Yeah, I had to decide which of these should be the plot and which should be the subplot. And of course, the thing is called Around the World in 80 Days, so the Phileas Fogg points should be the plot,
yeah.
And right. the mm-hmm. Jade Buddha should be the subplot. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it was given too much attention. Like, it would have been better if it took me most of the movie to figure out what was going. Like, why did Jackie Chan rob that bank? That right. I think. Would have made it a better movie, but it's a Disney movie. So you have to smack us over the face with the subplot from the very beginning. And then I'm like, what about the balloon? Like, so you know what I mean?
Do you think possibly that there was a conflict because this was a $110 million budget film. So
we had
Jackie Chan, who was our star in the vehicle, but the story was centered around another character. So you had to fulfill the Jackie Chan part as well as the story itself. So I'm just right. some kind of competing. It was just too much competing there, I suppose.
And then you also have to introduce a woman. Just any woman will do. and that was, you know, like they really didn't know what to do with her the whole movie.
Right.
Like it just, she just.
Wasn't that a popular formula during the time to have a buddy movie with the third, the love interest?
Ride along woman.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Very popular during that time. Yeah.
She's a hitchhiker woman. That doesn't even know she's a hitchhiker when they meet her. Like,
right. You know? Right. Yeah.
I like the new, it's a new trope description. It's the ride along woman. I like that a lot.
Yeah. I like the sidecar lady. I like that thing. It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. But so
isn't Rene Russo basically the ride along woman in Lethal Weapon 4? Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
True.
And there's many like this there. I would call Marion from the Indiana Jones movie. She's a ride along woman once she gets in. Because when they get to that place where she has to hide in a basket and there's the monkey and he shoots the guy after the swordplay and everything, that's all that's all ride along woman stuff.
Well, certainly Willie Scott too in the
big time
with Short Round and Indiana Jones in the second movie.
And they have to be it has to be portrayed a little bit like baggage, right? They have to be treated bit like, oh, if it wasn't for this, we'd have been.
You know
further.
Who's the ultimate ride along and becomes literally baggage in every movie? That's C-3PO. C-3PO, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
he's never a hero, or he's rarely a hero.
Yeah,
right. And he doesn't really contribute anything to. You wonder why they don't just leave him at some spaceport, and you know?
Oh, they have, right?
Yeah, totally. I like it's a that's a trope that I haven't really thought about, but it's in lots of things. I don't think it's just an 04 thing either. And by the way, this movie we mentioned it would cost 200 and whatever million to make. 240 was it?
No, nope, it was 110 and then another 30 million for marketing. So that box of Around the World in 80 Days Cheerios you got was also part of the marketing.
Yeah. And it lost 140 million. This movie lost $80 million. It was not profitable. It was considered one of the biggest tanks of all time. In fact, it holds the record for the biggest box office lost for any independent release. Now, I read that one. Independent. This is like a Disney movie.
Right.
And here's the reason, I guess. It was made by an independent group under Disney, some sort of subsidiary, small team, something. So they consider it an independent film, despite the distribution from Disney. And this is, of course, 04 Disney is a little different than current Disney.
It was it Spank Nice Films? Did I say that?
I don't know.
Spank
something like that. But they lost that. They have the record now as the largest loss by any independent film ever.
But does that count anymore in this day and age of Netflix and recycling and sending stuff out? I mean,
well, they got some money.
It probably translates to the primary holders, but
yeah.
I guess Disney still owns this. And
you don't want to wait. You know, 12 months to make your money back on a movie when you get it out into theaters and you do all that marketing and have to, you pay all the cast up front and all that stuff.
Right.
You don't want to have to say, all right, well, let's hope it does better on the
Netflix money
on the streaming market. Yeah.
I mean, I think there's something to that. If you're not talking $80 million, like you could break even you could do like, what's that movie? Donnie Darko. You could do, like kind of bad or middling in the theaters, but then be this huge phenomenon on DVD and make a ton of money. So that's possible.
And we're also talking about Hollywood accounting, right? So like as long as a film can be sold to people to watch whether or not it made a profit in the first month in theaters is kind of irrelevant, right? Like, it's 2017 and Empire Strikes Back has never made a profit. And, you know, like, that because, and that's because Hollywood accountants have found a way to take an $18 million movie that has grossed $300 million and show no profit. Yeah, so, of course, that also works in reverse, right?
Sure. The math is weird on this stuff, for sure. There's, and they, and I don't know why they do that. I mean, just straight up tell me what it is, adjust it for inflation, and walk away. Like that. I hate how creative they have to get with it all. This was Schwarzenegger's, by the way, final of four movies that had the word day in the title. I love this trivia.
What? Wow.
So it's here you go. You got.
Can we name them? Can we name them without?
Try it. Sorry, try it.
Whoa! Yes. Okay.
I've seen the trivia, so I'm not going to lie. I will refrain from participating.
There was End of Days, right? Was that around this time?
Yep.
There was this one, Around the World in 80 Days. So that's two. Randy, do you have some more?
Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Kerb, got it.
I thought of one.
Got it.
Good job.
And there's one last one. And 2000 is the hint I'll give you. It came out in 2000.
Okay, yeah, I don't remember the name of it, but I remember he was in this film where on the poster he's got his eyes covered in science.
Yes.
What's it called?
You're right. That's the one.
Day of Science.
That's totally the one. You're on the money. Does anyone know?
Science I Day.
Seriously, I'm sure it has day in the title.
Because he was, I remember him being in two of them because I kept getting them confused because one of them is about the end of the world and the other one's about the end of the world, right?
Yeah, that's all they're ever about. I feel like
Robert Duvall is in this movie.
Yeah, the movie is the sixth day is the movie.
The sixth day, thank you.
Sixth day,
thank
sixth
you.
It was some kind of VR wearing future predicting.
You're right, it does
bullshit.
Have signs.
How many people would basically think that The Sixth Day and End of Days are the same movie, or The Sixth Day?
I could have never named them separately.
I don't think I've seen either one, and so I have no idea.
The End of The Sixth Day.
Yeah, seriously, you could have put a pile of money in front of me and said, start making up names until you name these two movies. I would have gone broke.
What was the end of, what's End of Days? I don't even know what that is. Is that a movie?
Okay, so,
Jericho.
And it has Gabriel Byrne. Oh. It's actually a really good movie.
Oh, that sounds all right.
In my opinion.
Yeah, I like
Gabriel. Something we need to watch.
Yeah.
We do.
At the end of the century, Satan visits New York in search of a bride. It's up to an ex-cop who now runs an elite security outfit to stop him.
Wow.
That's an elite security outfit versus Satan.
Right. Is that the spinoff to Little Nicky? Yeah, is that
sounds like shit.
So I'm sorry. That was End of Days. Hold on. Sixth Day. I really didn't do that on purpose.
Oh, I thought you were doing it.
Actually, about a man who meets a clone of himself and stumbles into a grand conspiracy about clones taking over the world.
Oh, right.
Wow, that is really close to wow.
Yeah,
I mean, crazy stuff. Schwarzenegger's really our gold standard for film sack. Like he and Stallone just can't make a movie that doesn't sound sackable.
Yeah, I agree. Right. I mean, this one's just a cameo, so doesn't really count. I think for 80 days, but it's still indicative of the thing. I mean, he counts in terms of cast, but he's barely in this, and he's not.
He can't really call this a Schwarzenegger.
The least convincing Turkish leader of all time, though.
and while we're talking about those tropes, give me a trope.
Oh, good lord! I haven't even.
I think this movie has the most cameos we've ever seen. So I'm just going to name some besides Schwarzenegger and Rob Schneider.
Right.
We also saw both of the Wilson brothers, Luke and Owen Wilson.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and is this the first time, or how many times have we ever seen them actually playing brothers?
First time ever, it says. According to the trivia, it's first time.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? This further my confusion, because I kept confusing this movie with Shanghai Knights, which was Jackie Chan and Wilson. And when he showed up in this one, I was like, am I getting these movies confused? And yes, I was.
Yeah, you totally were. Yes, and they were doing these, I think the Shanghai Knights movies, either one or two of them was before this, right?
Like those I beg to differ. Weren't they both in the Royal Tenenbaums?
They were, but they weren't brothers. They weren't brothers in it.
Oh, playing brothers.
Yeah, playing brothers.
Yeah.
They're still brothers in real life. Oh.
They were in Bottle Rocket together. I think they've been in three Wes Anderson movies together, but this is the first time
I think
I've ever seen them playing brothers.
Yeah,
playing. And I guess the trivia confirms that, right?
Yeah, and they're playing the Wright brothers specifically, but Wilbur and Orville, and apparently Wilbur's a real dick back in the day.
I love that. I've always wanted to explore that movie. I would love to hear more about their story and which one was the real hero in that story.
Yeah, was one of them just a total like leech like that?
There's really not a lot of information
just, like,
on that.
Coattails. You work on that. I'm going to be over here.
Yeah. But it is interesting in the fact that they. It's funny because they're brothers, yes, but you could have, before I knew that they were related, you could have fooled me. They don't look related to me.
Mm-mm. Not even. No,
they look like different people, and it's not just the broken nose.
Oh, Luke Wilson actually has a good nose.
Yeah. He's actually kind of handsome.
Maybe it's genetic and he's had it fixed. Do you ever think about that?
Maybe.
Oh, interesting.
Could be. I don't think so, though. There's some story about Owen getting his face bashed in when he was younger or something.
So the cameos go on for days.
Kind of mouth off to the wrong person.
I got beat up.
There's enough cameos in this film that I actually want to go around the table and ask, what was your favorite, like, spotting? Ooh. Like, where wow, I know who that is.
Mm. I'll tell you exactly what mine
is. All right, what was it?
Go ahead, and I'll do mine.
It was Will Forte as the...
Dang it!
Did I take yours?
Yeah, it's John Cleese and Will Forte, and their little exchange was just brilliant.
Well, it was Will Forte's first ever anything. He wasn't on SNL. Yeah. There was no nothing. It was just...
Oh, really? Yeah. This is even before SNL.
Yeah,
this is
before
he must have been doing stand-up or something, and... got in somewhere or another. Yeah.
Groundlings or something.
Well, maybe knew Sandler or something, or who knows, but because this director is a big Sandler guy and maybe there was some connection there, but who knows. But yeah, that was a pretty good one. And John Cleese, you just mentioned, is standing there next to him, so that's an obvious one. Dunaway, you already said it was World
that
War
was, yeah, that was the same thing.
Randy,
I will say that was my best surprise. However, I will say, as much crap as we give Rob Schneider, his portrayal and
it wasn't that bad. It was okay.
It was good.
I wouldn't say hilarious. It was all right. I'm not going to apply hilarious as a tag, but I will say it was okay. It was a lot better. It was just less frustrating than all the other ones he ever does.
Right.
And when I see him now, all I think about is your daughter that's real little in 04 is going to be awesome one day. She's going to be great. She's going to be giving O's to her X's and O's or whatever that means. Anyway, Randy, who's your
I spotted Sammo Hung in this movie.
Oh yeah.
And I didn't, I, it took me a while. Cause I'm like, who is this? He's a freaking Hong Kong hero of all time. Right, he's one of the greatest martial arts film stars ever. And it took me a long time. And I finally remembered, seeing a movie from back when I was in my, ninja martial arts phase in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. There was a movie he was in that was pretty famous, and now I'm forgetting the name of it. But it's called Ren Zha Ren, and it's from 1982, and he is the writer and the star of the film, Sammo Hung.
Yeah, he's great.
And
I like him.
If you've seen any films that he was in when he was in his prime, he has puffy cheeks. Mm-hmm. Like, you think of him as the round faced guy.
Yeah,
right.
And he's just amazing. He's a sword master.
Yeah,
he's incredible. When I saw him, it was just like where you're taken out of the film, and you're like, "Who is this? I know this face." Mm-hmm. Like if you spotted John Cleese in this film, same thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like he's got a bit role.
Very small role.
I was kind of surprised at Richard Branson's quick cameo.
Oh yeah, Branson in
fast, I almost missed it.
It was in the balloon, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, when he was handing the balloon off.
He has some joke about that'll never work or something.
Right,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I don't like Richard Branson gives me the willies. I just want to put that out there.
Just looks like he perpetually smells like cologne.
Yeah.
And the film has the entire supporting cast of the Harry Potter universe.
Yeah, it feels like it. Like all those old guys in this Academy of Science, every one of those guys, I swear I've seen them. And of course, Broadbent, we have absolutely seen him.
Yeah, of course.
Dark arts teacher in the last two books. But everybody else looks like somebody I've seen in the Harry Potter
book. I could watch an hour of them just being aloof. Yeah. I could watch that all day. Yeah. It was fun.
Ian McNeice was... I had to look it up. I didn't realize it was Ian McNeice. I thought it was the guy who played Dursley that we just lost. Last year.
I did too. Right. Yeah. Right. I thought it was Harry Potter's stepfather, but it's not.
Yep. Oh, nope. Did Dursley, that guy died? Oh.
He died, yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah, but a really minor role in the Harry Potter books is Elpheus Doge.
Mm-hmm.
And the actor who played him, David Ryle, died 3 years ago. He's in this film. He is your Lord Salisbury that you were making.
Yeah, the old guy with the crazy hair, the crazy chops, man. That guy had some chops on him. For me, my name, or the person I would jump out or jumps out as a cool cameo for me is probably another Asian actor, and it would be Daniel Wu,
mm-hmm.
who played Back May. And mm-hmm. lately, I am all into Daniel Wu because I finally started watching Into the Badlands, and he's the main character in that, and he is utterly fantastic in that. He's,
and
so
he's
good.
The guy with the really cool scorpion gauntlets, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
He's the, I put that gif up of him saying, come at me, bro, and he's like... He's very young here, but he is really cool in that show, The End of the Badlands. He's just an utter badass at every turn.
Right.
And cool. let us not forget how badass he was as Gul'dan in Warcraft.
Oh, I forgot he was Gul'dan. Oh. That's right. He was all in the, well, I mean, he was, you know, covered in makeup and CGI.
Sure, but for the rest of my life, I will never forget the scene where Daniel Wu as Gul'dan is sitting up on a ledge above the dark portal and he's vaping off of a slave to get power. It's just right. like, it's scary and he's so menacing and he keeps reaching over and sucking the life out of this guy.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. He's right. I totally awesome. Forgot. That's who that was. You're right. And also he's in the new Tomb Raider that's being filmed right now, which I have some mm-hmm. concerns about, but whatever. Right. I'm excited about it nonetheless. Wait, who's in that?
Not Angelina Jolie.
It's Alicia Vikander.
Oh, right, from Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, Ex Machina.
The android.
Ex
Machina. Yeah,
with the boobies out. She got the boobies out in that movie.
Nice boobies out.
Speaking of boobies out, that French lady that's in this thing, her entire career outside of this is boobies out. That's her job. Like I did some hunting around.
I thought you were talking about the sleeping French woman.
No. The one that's traveling with him. And if you go look at her stuff, she is
Cécile de France, which is French for Cécile of France.
Of France. And she's not actually from France.
No, she's from Belgium.
But she traveled there. Right.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's
which
great.
Which is great.
Yeah, that's pretty great. But she's in so many French and like Belgian movies where she's naked. Just constantly naked.
Well, that's like they do that during the credits of Belgian and French movies.
I did not know this cameo. Macy Gray was the sleeping French woman who almost let her baby die, I'm assuming. In the apartment.
That was Macy Gray.
Jackie Chan was going by. Yeah, I'm assuming that's right. It says sleeping French woman is who she's cast as, and that's the only sleeping French woman.
What is Jackie Chan has the worst line in the movie. No offense to the writer. Jackie, seriously, he has a line there where he crashes in. He's right outside the apartment, and there's a fire, and he says something like
he says, "Wake up, lady."
No, he says like, "Wake up, mama."
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Like, wake up, mama.
Yeah, and I was just like, wait, did he just accidentally find his mother? Like, it took me a second to realize what was going on.
Right.
Yeah, that was odd. That entire. Well, I think it was supposed to establish, hey, he'll stop this craziness to help somebody in need.
He'll save the world one person at a time.
Yeah.
He'll do it.
And in moments like that, I was actually okay with a lot of that because that stuff to me was like, you know, led to fights with him. And those fights were very Jackie Chan fights. He's got that stool or that bench. I mean, that was awesome. Yeah. That's kind of stuff is what I miss about him. I think I got out of this was like, all right, this may represent the last good martial arts Jackie Chan style movie we're going to get with Jackie Chan in it from now on because of either age or Hollywood's unwillingness to take risks. And
at this time now he's 50 when he makes this movie.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you're right.
Now he fights with rocking chairs.
If we all could look that good at 50, man.
Then he sits in them.
I would kill to look like Jackie Chan at 50. And I like long hair Jackie Chan a lot. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Like he's just a badass. Yeah. He's awesome.
So we see him at the beginning too with all that facial hair and he hops in the back of that tailor truck. So is there like somebody going to get their tailored suit back and it's going to be full of Jackie Chan facial hair?
That's the thinking.
I hope so.
That's what I hope as well.
So
I actually wrote that down as here's the thing I think might be the grossest thing for Scott.
No, there was a very specific, if you guys want to get to it now, we can, but there was a very specific moment.
Grossest thing. Oh, wow. There were so many.
Easy pick for me.
Easy pick.
I'll give you a hint.
Just looking at Arnold Schwarzenegger in this movie was just disgusting.
No, that part was fine. That didn't bother me. I'll tell you the setting and that may help. So it was on the train. Is where I was the most horrified.
Right.
There was a brief
on the Orient Express.
Yes. With apparently fairy crystals coming out of the top of it. What was that about? Did you just notice that in the graphic?
Yeah.
We haven't even mentioned this.
We should talk about the graphic.
Every title, yeah, all the interstitials and every title of words that came up in whatever font they were in, all looked like the worst Photoshop filters I've ever seen in my life.
Like 14 Photoshop filters, 3D bevel emboss, drop shadow.
A little bit of change the opacity. Yeah, it's awful. It's really bad.
I kind of hate it, and I kind of
love it.
How much risk they took with that? I mean, early on 3D.
Yeah.
I didn't like the text, but I did like the zooming in on the city and how it, you know, it goes from being a map to being like actual location. Yeah. That I thought, because
it felt kind of like someone's idea of an animated pop-up picture book.
A little bit. Totally. Yeah. Right. That was all right. It was a little GameCube-y graphics-wise. Like it was clearly we're in an era where we weren't quite with the fidelity yet, but that stuff was fine. But every time text was on the screen, I'm like, I could have done this. In my sleep on Photoshop, like bad.
What's the Old West font? What is that one? What do you call that one?
Black letter.
Was it black letter?
Maybe
or black oak or something like that.
I have a few fake. I have some fake ones that someone just made. I don't know the names of them. Mm-hmm. Fonts are weird now. It used to be that they were always very specifically named and very expensive. There's trillions of them. Mm-hmm. It's like the font.
So were the fonts the grossest? Was that what grossed you out? Was the fonts?
No. It was on, it was on the train and it was foul. It grossed me out.
Dang. I can think it was the champagne.
Okay. I'll tell you what the scene was. Wait, should I play do I have a thing? Hold on. Here you go. This is the grossest thing I saw. It was when he was fighting with that skinny British guy that I like in everything. What's his name?
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Spud Boy from Trainspotting.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Yes.
He's another Godley. Yeah.
He's got big ears.
Yeah. He's my other high point of the movie. But when they're wrestling around in the car and he starts tripping and bonking all over the place and Jackie Chan grabs him to try to save him from falling out of the train, he yanks his socks.
No, it was Ewan Bremmer.
Spud Boy.
Yeah, so he pulls his socks off, and then that's not gross. It's that he smells them both first and then throws them. Yeah,
he totally does them. Then he goes,
and then throws them.
Like he was expecting them to be like dreamy or something.
Yeah, and you're at a time in British history where no one's feet are good ever anywhere.
I have to take us back a step though. Adam Godley and Ewan Bremmer are my personal best example of I did not know that was two different people until
Oh, wow. Like, nice. Until this moment.
If you had showed me one or the other in a movie, like for example, I can now see Ewan Bremmer is from Trainspotting, but like I would have seen one and gone, that's that guy who, I don't know what, you know, but like, they are so in the same exact space in my brain.
Right.
Wow.
Have you guys seen the BFG? They just put it on Netflix.
Oh, no, I want to see that, though, even though I own it.
And
I keep hearing that's a little like this, though, kind of my problem of it being too shiny and nice and whatever, but maybe I'm wrong.
Right. But BFG is going to have a lot more Spielberg all over it, so.
Yeah, but guess what? Guess what had a lot of Spielberg all over it? Hook and Indiana Jones 4.
Okay.
Those had a lot of Spielberg on them, and they were both like that. Like, you know what? Crystal Skull, same problem, the thing I was talking about earlier. It's that weird, go-through-the-motions kind of movie making, and I don't mean lazy, I just mean they're not taking any risks and it plays to a very low common denominator, and that's why those movies suck.
I feel like one of the things we've all learned from Brian Dunaway is to spot where the philosophy of marketing is impacting a movie. Like after episode 7, I remember Brian Dunaway saying, oh, you know why C-3PO had a red arm?
Yeah.
You know, so they could sell new C-3PO toys.
Yeah.
And why does a movie like this, why does it have these things that where you're like, this is unnecessary, and it's Disney. So maybe they're trying to shoehorn a Disney ride into a movie.
I would ride that round and round roller coaster from the beginning all day long.
I know. But didn't you get the sense that there were little pieces and parts of a Disney park?
Maybe they were gonna, I thought they were going to try to expand on It's a Small World, maybe change it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good. That's a pretty astute observation. That right already feels
like it takes 80 days to
Yeah. That's an astute observation, because if they had a big success with this and it would have led to sequels and stuff, they could have, you could easily see them cordoning off a part of the park and making something new for around the world. I could totally see that.
It's a great adventure idea, around the world in 80 days. But I think people who were fans of the classic probably were a little disappointed in this translation, because this is just a goofy translation of what was kind of Big Adventure.
I've never read the, is it Jules Verne? Is that who did it?
Yeah, Jules Verne.
I've never read it, so I have no idea what to expect, but is it got fantasy?
Nothing like this.
Okay. No.
Is there magic and stuff in it? Like, he's magical in the book, or no?
Yeah, he's magical.
Okay. That's why this is...
He's not magical.
Well, no, that's what I'm wondering, because it's like the Gypsy thing, which, by the way, we got a great email about later about gypsies. But my head, anything Jules Verne ever made was always fantasy and always magic. And
it was about discovering, you know, the different societies around the world. And I mean, each adventure was, getting to know outside your own small world. That was the point of this movie, is that the character, Phileas, was... You know, he had never been outside England, and suddenly he's exploring the world just like, you know, a young man would do. Mm-hmm. So it's a great adventure story. It's good.
Well, okay. No, you're saying the original is. I'm just saying.
Right.
My bigger question is, could somebody today start a fresh take on this and be successful with it, do we think?
I don't know. It's like, could somebody do a fresh take on Romeo and Juliet? Yes, and they have in the last 30 years, but we're now at a point where I'm like, would they? I don't know.
I think we'd have to change the title, because Around the World in 80 Days does not excite our generation, because we can do it so much faster.
And it's also a spoiler.
Right. Spoiler. So, I mean, if you were to... I was actually thinking about this. I was thinking, man, wouldn't this be a good story if you could figure out how to make it, how to get across the universe in 80 days
What's cool is that The adaptations that they've done of this that are nonfiction, right? Like the Michael Palin deal, where he has to get from, you know, one place to another without doing any air travel, or maybe I'm remembering that wrong. But
no, that's totally it. He was trying to relive Jules Verne's thing and do it in 80 days. You're right. Documentary.
And, I mean, even reality shows like The Amazing Race kind of are trying to do the same thing, where it's like, all right, you're going from city to city to city to city. And just getting a taste of it before you get on to the next thing. I like this as a trope for nonfiction more than I do as revisit this same story, even though this isn't even close to the same story as the original book. Yeah. Apparently,
do you think it's made harder or worse because we live in an era where traveling around the world is no big deal? Like, you could be across the world in less than 12 hours. No. Like, it doesn't. It part of that. I realize it's a historical period thing you always have to do to make it work, but I don't know if people are as interested. Once you conquer that, it's just kind of antiquated.
Totally. Because, I mean, if you were to say, okay, well, I can get around the world in whatever time it takes for me to fly to this point, refuel, fly again, and never see anything but four airports.
Right.
Right.
Right. Maybe they could do, they could take that Han. Maybe
Richard Branson.
Maybe that Han Solo movie could be the Kessel Run in 80 parsecs.
That's 80 parsecs.
Yeah. We got it. Now we can fit it in.
Even the 50s, when they did this movie, they did another version of this movie. I think people were still fascinated with meeting new different types of people in different societies. Whereas now we're so connected all across the world already.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. Like what we're doing. I mean, we're all in the States, but you know, when I talk to Patrick or Terpster or somebody from across the world and be on a show where there's a guy from Saudi Arabia on that call, and we're all doing it in real time, and we're doing it for free. I mean, it's the barriers just aren't there anymore. So this idea of like, oh, circumnavigate the globe, and like, it's just an old thing. We've done it.
It would be cool to see something like this where you do a show where you follow someone and they have to get basically follow the same path, but they can't use the same mode of transportation more than once. So it's car for as long as you want to do the car, and then train and bus and boat and hot air balloon and airplane and whatever.
So riding with Captain with no nipples.
Have you guys heard of a book called Parsec?
Parsec? No.
Carsec.
Oh, Carsec.
Anyone?
No, but I think I've lived that book with my wife and my one daughter, who always get carsick, but yeah.
So about 3 years ago, John Waters, yes, that John Waters.
Really? Skinny mustache John Waters.
Yeah.
He hitchhiked from Baltimore to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
He hitchhiked the entire distance. Mm-hmm. And he actually did this, and he kept notes as he went, and he turned those memoirs into a book called Car Sick. Mm-hmm. And it's really entertaining to me. I'm not going to recommend it to everybody, but he calls it a hobo homo journey, and it because it's real, because it's this truthful story about what it's like to be on foot and in cars randomly in America.
No.
There was a lot of things that I really connected with in that book, and it's one of those things where you got me thinking. You know what? The problem with Around the World in 80 Days is that it sets its sights too high. It's too grand. Mm-hmm. It does like maybe that was entertaining 200 years ago, but now we're like, give me the small town nitty gritty thing that I don't know about yet, or you know the characters that are plain that I've never heard of before and that are interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. I mean, you go over you know half of France in a hot air balloon, you miss that interaction with places that aren't Paris and and easy to get around and these little small places where oh no you get a flat tire and it's going to take you 2 weeks to get a little hose to fix it or whatever you know that kind of more
weeks.
Danger and more
there's drama in that as reality shows drama. Have taught us right like the reality I think I'm with Brian I think the place for this is not necessarily in fiction anymore it's in you know
reality
Like the
striking thing about this John Waters hitchhiking thing is that it's John Waters. He's very recognizable. Mm-hmm. And he's going into McDonald's and he's spending a night in a Motel 6 and so on. And he's getting to be anonymous for the most part. There are people who recognize him here and there, but he's getting to be anonymous and he's in these dingy, unhappy places.
Right.
And it's just, it's fascinating and it's very entertaining. And it's, by the way, we were talking about sadness earlier. It's really never sad. It's kind of uplifting.
Sure.
Me.
Yeah.
And this movie keeps insisting on being happy and boisterous. And I never really feel it, you know, like you were at the beginning, Scott, you were talking about how they would show up in a new place and you already knew what was going to go down.
Sure. Yeah.
So this film doesn't really ever surprise you and you're like, oh, whew, I'm glad they made it out of that scrape.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's never, there's never a surprise. And I mean, oh, by the way, John Waters looks like a peanut. I just want to get that out of my head.
Yes, he does.
A peanut with a little tiny mustache.
He gave him a monocle. He could be the modern Mr. Peanut for sure. Anyway, now I forgot what I was going to say because all I can think about is peanut John Waters' head because he really does, especially today. If you look up a recent photo, total peanut head. Let's see. There's other stuff. It just felt like one bad joke after another. Oh, an update here from David Goldstein, who tweeted us, one of the writers on this thing. He says he may be wrong, but this could be the only film in history written by three Davids.
Interesting.
He says I always wanted to verify that, and I haven't been able to find anything to
David
X
3. Interesting.
Which is kind of interesting. I guess that's one thing to hang your hat on. Anyway, so there's that. Let's see. What else? I talked about that. Chan fights are good. Prefer him with long hair. Oh.
My notes are prefer him with long hair.
I always forget the Robert Baratheon guy, the ship captain with the nipple problem.
Yeah. Yeah, the nipple problem.
I always forget he's kind of the heavyset dude from The Full Monty.
Oh, yeah. I'd forget that.
That guy's great. Anyway, Ibbet, you were about to say something.
One of my early notes in the movie, and we kind of talked about this just with the slapstickness, but and so maybe we don't need to come back to it, but isn't this basically an Ernest movie?
Yeah, kind of.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Could you have Jim Varney as the Jackie Chan role and
goodness,
dangling
that
from
so
a rope and
save
that woman from the bar.
He's the bumbling idiot with skills, and that's just
You're totally right. Like that's again, this is the same genre, and it's weird to see such a high budget film fall into that. And it's
like
the look of it.
Hillbilly Around the World. Right. Days. I want to see that.
Oh, no, you don't.
And that's my first and last point. Like, what is Steve Coogan doing in the title role here?
Yeah.
I just don't. It's crazy.
Chewing up the scenery.
Yeah, he's no, I like Coogan a
I'm
lot.
I'm not saying he's bad. I'm just saying he doesn't have the cash, you know, like the gravitas. I don't know what the word is for this guy in this role, but like if I start asking you guys, who would you have preferred to play Phileas Fogg? You're going to name people who make $50 million a movie more than Steve Coogan.
Probably. Right? Or I'm going to maybe name somebody like a Monty Python alumni, like not John Cleese, but Eric Idle, maybe.
Oh my God.
Eric Idle would be good.
Mm. Yeah, Eric Idle 30 years ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Right. He looks like a cat. Speaking of people look like things.
Perfect role is the dude who played Theory of Everything, Hawking.
Brendan Fram. He was in the
Brendan Fraser. Why not?
No. He was in the thing
the
with
Danish
the
girl.
The Harry Potter thing with the dangerous creatures.
Eddie Redmayne.
That's it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think he'd be the perfect Phileas Fogg.
Yeah, nailed it. I think Brian's.
I'm gonna defend my man here. I think he did. I was not a believer when I saw the trailer for Steve Coogan as Phileas Fogg. I was not a believer. But by the time I got to the end, I was like, bravo. Mm. I mean, it was silly, stupid, but he fit right in. He delivered exactly what this film was wanting to be.
He was the guy he was getting Night of the Museum kind of roles then. Like, this is what he was doing before people started taking him more seriously, and he started having some cool independent projects, and then recently that Philomena movie is incredible, and he's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, he's awesome. That guy is great.
He doesn't have a lot of heart in this film.
Yeah. I agree. It's very, again, cartoonish. Everyone's just a cartoon. Mm-hmm. And I like cartoons. Don't get me wrong. Like, this might have been a better animated feature. This could have been a great Disney with musical stuff animated feature. That, I think, would fit. But this is like just a live action cartoon, not in the way you want.
So there were two people. I'm just going to answer my own question. There were two people that kept coming to mind for me.
Yeah.
That I would have loved to see in this, and still to this day, I think could carry this movie in that title main role. One is Eddie Izzard.
That would be good.
You
know,
same kind of buddies in profession with Steve Coogan, right?
Good call. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. Okay, who's your other one?
And then the other, and I want to see it right now.
Don't
is
say,
Andy Serkis.
Okay, if you rather you say Johnny Depp, and I was gonna shit myself.
No, Andy Serkis, you know, Gollum.
Yeah. No, Serkis would be great. I like him. Yeah. He needs to be. So he's, you know, Caesar in the Apes movies and does all this body work. But every once in a while, he'll show up as normal, you know, just a guy in a movie. And he's always great. Always good. Why don't we see more Andy Serkis in just regular roles? I don't get it.
He's only got so much time.
Even that 13 to 33 or whatever that movie was with Jennifer Garner, it was.
Same year, right?
Was it?
That's what he was doing this year,
Oh, that's true. You're totally right.
Yeah,
but he is so good as the editor of the magazine she works for. And it's just this small role, but every time he does it, I go, oh man, more Andy Serkis that isn't covered in you know, ping pong balls and mocap.
Right. Or voice only, right? He's the voice of Snoke in the new Star Wars films. He's basically a voice in the Fellowship of the Ring films, you know?
Yeah, and he's more, in the case of Caesar, it's a body, he's body acting, but he's also mostly a voice there, too. As, you know, I don't know. I think the guy deserves to be out in front of the camera more.
But it's hard to say that he needs to do more, because if you look at his IMDb.
Yeah, he's busy.
Yeah,
he's got shit to do.
He's busy. He takes roles, like a bit role in Avengers Age of Ultron, and you're just like, why couldn't he have been one of the Avengers? I mean, he's going to be a bigger deal?
He'll be a bigger deal in Black Panther, don't you think, Ibbett? Because he's the main villain of the main villains. Yeah.
Are we doing another Jungle Book already? Are they doing an animated one?
Yes.
Because 2018 Jungle Book.
Yes, that's correct. There is another Jungle Book coming.
That's a lot of Jungle Book. A lot
that
quicker
is.
Than you'd like.
So not a sequel to the live action one that we just had.
No, apparently
but like
not.
A little different. Oh, geez.
Okay.
No, yeah.
All right.
Hmm.
That live action one's real good. Made a lot of money.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you?
What? You didn't like that? You didn't like it, Brian? Randy, you did not like the Jungle Book. Am I hearing that?
No. I was just mistaking it with another movie for just a second, and it's the new Pete's Dragon.
Oh,
I haven't seen that yet. I want to though.
Right.
It's I am so frustrated by that stupid movie.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I had a flashback to. So Pete's Dragon comes out last year, and for whatever reason, I missed taking my kid to see it, and I'm glad, because it then goes streaming on Netflix a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And we sat down to watch Pete's Dragon together, me and my 7-year-old son, and the movie starts with a little kid that my child is going to identify with 100%, a little kid watching the violent deaths of his parents.
Oh, man.
And jeez. It's Batman. Like, what are you doing to me movie? Mm. You know?
That's surprising. I haven't seen it, but that surprises me. I didn't know that.
Suddenly Around the World in 80 Days doesn't seem so bad.
You know what's kind of hardcore is that Disney Tarzan parent death is pretty rough. With the leopard or whatever that gets the parents. That's pretty that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah. I was just mad at Disney. Like,
once in a while they do that, man. They'll come swooping in and fart all over your breakfast. It's just the way it goes.
Pardon me, excuse me.
Like, I almost kind of wish the movie had started with a disclaimer on the screen. You know, if you're watching with little kids, maybe skip the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right.
Was it Robert Redford in that?
You know, we need a service like that. Like, you know, you get a lot of services that tell you when to run, pee, and that kind of stuff. Maybe we need one that tells you when you...
There's the one in Utah that actually would take movies and cut the, clean, the nudity and
clean flicks.
Swearing and stuff.
Yep. It was clean flicks and they're gone now. They're long gone. But no. Yeah. They were
we need one for sad movies. Like take out always, the sad.
Yeah.
They were always in legal trouble, right? They were always fighting.
They were
Hollywood
constantly there's a two-factor deal with them. They were always in trouble for legal stuff because the studios and the directors and everybody really hated that they were doing this.
Of course.
And they lost every battle that they had in court. So there was that. But then also the founder or one of the co-founders of the company ended up being some kind of weirdo perv. And like, you know, the whole
look at perv all day. He's got to cut the perv.
Listen, it's the doth protest too much thing that I hate so much. Whenever somebody is so hardcore into one thing, they focus on it. Like I'm cleaning up movies. I'm like, you're getting your diddle doodled somewhere else, buddy.
but there's also the internet, right? The internet kills a business like that, right? Because now people can privately clean up movies and share them with each other, and you don't need to go to a specific store in Salt Lake City to get your not even Salt Lake City. It was like south in some other city.
It was in it was centered in Provo or Orem or something, which makes sense. Utah County is much more conservative.
This is real easy to fix. You just you create a frame and you just embed Netflix in it, and then whenever bad things happen, you just have an animated GIF of Scott's dad coming out and throwing a towel.
Yeah, right.
I love that idea. It was one of my favorite things about him is the towel thing, and why not preserve it forever as an animated GIF? That's great. Dang it, I wish he was still around. I could have him do it once and then film it. That'd be amazing.
Right.
Yeah, no, that whole thing is a real pock on our face here. Everyone was annoyed by that whole process. And you can understand how some parents were like, are you telling me I could just get one of these discs and put it in the thing and I want to worry about my kids and they can watch RoboCop and only see all the parts that are cool?
Yeah, but can you imagine as an artist creating this stuff and then know somebody's out there just destroying your vision? I mean,
I agree that it's weird, right? Like, it's definitely freaking weird, but it's so... I understand why parents were into it. I get it. Like, they've got 5-year-olds and
you
they want to see
kids.
Yeah, and you want to see a thing and you're like, well, this is the greatest thing ever. But what you were doing is two things wrong. You were counting on somebody else to adhere to whatever you thought your standards were.
Right.
And there's no way to, how do you define that? Because it's different for everybody. And then also, the guy was a freaking pervert. He was getting his wiener. He was poking people.
Back to that.
Yeah, he was like raped somebody or something. It was awful.
If I didn't watch anything with perverts, I would have nothing to watch.
Right. You need the perverts in your life.
Yeah.
You know? What am I thinking? What am I thinking exactly? So anyway.
Give me a Trump alert.
Oh, I got one. Here's one. Wait. Here it is. Right here.
Chicken a bucket times 10, man. This movie bathes in that trope. It's like... Mm-hmm. Everywhere we go, there's somebody who we're going to leave in the lurch on a moment's notice.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then off we go. I don't even know who to begin to call the most, typical chick in a bucket in this thing.
Yeah, they're all over the place. The biggest one for me was the lady that stole his, he ran into her or whatever, the good looking lady that ended up ripping him off.
Oh, that stole his bag in San Francisco.
Yeah, she's my favorite chick in the bucket, I think. She's also listed, by the way, in the credits as stunning woman. And she really is. She's beautiful.
She's really pretty. Yeah.
Mine was actually not a person. This is how I felt the entire film. Okay, right now, they're wherever they are in the world, right now, back in London, there are some neighbors standing out in a yard looking at a strange roller coaster. Like, what are we going to do with this in our neighborhood?
This movie roller coaster. this movie paints such a path of destruction for our heroes. If they had like a police chief at the end, he would berate them for 20 minutes and just recap all the crap they destroyed and how much it cost the world.
Yeah, that sounds right. I don't know. I don't like movies. I say that, but then I kind of like road movie or, you know, these contest movies, but when they're Cannonball Run style. Where it's like, I'll get in the car, get across the desert, and whoever gets there first wins the casino or whatever. That's fun.
Yeah.
And this is not that, though. This is like not that. This is there's no competition. No one, only competition
to,
is
no one wants to win the Academy of Science. Nobody wants to.
Yeah. Your only competition is freaking Moulin Rouge owner back there in Europe rubbing his chin.
Yeah, and like I said, like I was alluding to in my greeting, the Royal Academy in this movie are people you wouldn't want to have anything to do with. Yeah. Why would they motivate you to anything? Who cares? Like, they're horrible people.
Yeah. I love Jim Broadbent, but and I think he's
so good.
I think he's fine in what he's doing here. Like, he's getting the role right, but it's just such a snidely whiplash role. Like,
But why do I laugh every time he stabs somebody with one of those darts? Why is that always funny to me?
There are a couple of moments like that. I think I even recorded some, which we'll play here in a second. But it's not all bad for him. He's fine. When he's making fun of the queen while she's right behind him, I laughed at a part of that.
Yeah.
When he says,
it's such an old joke.
It's a terrible old joke. She's right behind me. Exactly. It's such a dumb joke, but he kind of gets it right. You know?
He sells it.
Yeah. I like him. Yeah. Jim Broadbent, you're okay with us, is all we're saying. Right. Speaking of Eclipse, go ahead.
Have we been keeping count how many times the Statue of Liberty has appeared in film sack movies?
Well, I wish we had.
Right. Ever before have we had a pair of feet dangle outside like big boogers? any other use of that? I think that's way too small too. I don't think the real Statue of Liberty. I don't think you could get
that
somebody
was the one they were delivering
far enough.
Yeah, that's the one they were delivering to Las Vegas. It was.
It's for the New York casino.
Right. I like that. I like that scene, and I was going to make a GIF out of it, but I didn't know what to title it or what to subtitle it, so I didn't do it. Because what does it mean? And legs pop out of a nose? What are you going to do with that?
You do it at you.
Yeah. Oh, hey, that's like, all right. Right. Bless you or something or something. Right. Well, now that you say it, shit, I'll have to go back. let's do, you always want to do some clips? I got a load here.
Please.
All right.
You gotta be got a load.
I've got a load ready for you. Clips. Here's your load. It's, I don't know what this is. Something about not my fault.
The electrocution was not my fault.
Oh, literally, it's not his fault. What happened there?
Okay.
So that was that. Here's, I like this line.
You refuse to wear the rubber underpants.
That's pretty good.
Who's he yelling that at? It's about getting shot.
His previous valet.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, what a trope, too. What a trope, too, by the way. Someone fleeing from persecution and taking on a job that no one wants.
Yeah, that nobody wants. Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah. And also, wait, hold on now. When they say valet in the day, like today with valet parking and it's a dude that parked your car.
Right.
Back then it was like a manservant? You'd pay that dude or what? How did that work?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, he did a lot more.
Okay. It's like your personal, it's like your personal assistant is what that was back then.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and did anyone else kind of choke when they come up with his name when they're together?
Yes.
Like, what's your name? And he starts just saying things.
Mm. Yeah, and it's funny because the character from the book is pronounced like almost sounds like Passport 2.
Oh, is that why it's that? See, I've never read it, so I don't know. I should read that stuff. I feel like I've missed the boat on a lot of like Jules Verne and
that's just such a trope. Like, what's your name? And then they say something, and they're like, "Okay, so that's in Back to the Future. Your name is Calvin Klein." You know, like so many.
Yes, right.
Oh, I hate that Calvin Klein. So many movies. So no, you're right. That's all over the place. Here's a little French from our little man there.
Wee.
All right, so there's wee. And then here he is doing a very French accent.
Very, very French.
There you go. Not very French at all, turns out. Jim Broadbent for 10 seconds.
The Royal Academy of Science declared this crackpot mentally incompetent, and he was duly dispatched to a lunatic asylum.
Where is Satine? You can! I just expected.
Oh, so that's him for you? Is that him for you?
It's like, always him for
Moulin
me.
Moulin Rouge?
Yeah. First memory of him is Moulin Rouge, so everything he's in since, it's what I think of. Can't help
okay.
it.
Okay. Because for makes me, sense. It's Professor Slughorn. He will always be Professor Slughorn.
It's a tie. I almost can't.
It just came so much later than that for me.
Yeah.
Like, I would have done the same probably. I like Jim Broadbent. He's a hell of an actor. A Strange Pain Sound, I titled this one. So
oof.
Here you go.
Oh, it was one of that sounds like something like from Family Guy.
I think
it's like something
he,
Peter would do.
It's when was he got that, hit in the butt with a thing.
The hot thing.
You know when he got? I think it's when he got hit in the butt with the quills for the first time. The fat guy.
Oh.
Yeah. let's see. This is not nice to say about women, and this is what he said.
What sort of pathetic man takes orders from a woman?
Me, for one. let's see. What's this? I love this guy.
All vehicles must be powered by horses.
That guy's great.
Couldn't understand a word he said. Yeah. I had closed captioned that crap.
He's never intelligible.
That's Ewan Brenner,
yeah.
right?
This is his job in Hollywood is to be unintelligible. Here's Jackie Chan doing some French.
Chaque bleu la champagne, chateau bien, François, voilà, voilà, la foutu quoi.
There's your old joke too. It's like burrito, taco, quesadilla. Nacho.
I don't really speak the language. I will use the menu.
Every right, yes,
hate
right,
that. Hate
it. Menage a
trois. Here is
they left that one out.
Yeah, they did. They, well, you know, they only have one brothel scene, and you got to use it right. So why not? Wasn't there a brothel scene in the city?
There was a brothel scene when he was going up through the when he was being pulled by the hot air balloon right before he saved Macy Gray.
And they were just
and her baby.
And they were just like they were just frilly Frenchy ladies in there, right?
Frilly Frenchy ladies.
Like it wasn't.
Yes, they were frilly Frenchy ladies.
It wasn't like some. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is it wasn't somebody like assuming the position in there or something like
no,
that.
No. This was Disney movie.
I couldn't remember. Here's Arnold Schwarzenegger and his big moment.
How magical that our path should cross. Do you believe in fate?
Is that what you call it? When one stops a moving train and kidnaps its passengers?
Phileas Fogg, please forgive me, but I feel like Aphrodite herself descended to Earth.
He's so freaking bad, you guys.
Yeah.
He's just
but it was fun.
But why? Why is he there? Why
he
is he in this movie?
Be there.
Why was he? Turkish bathhouse turns into Turkish hot tub. It.
Also, Austrian sounding German man turns into Turkish leader. Come on, like none of that worked.
Fully dressed hot tub action too.
Yeah,
yeah.
You needed somebody who looked and sounded Turkish, please, next time, because not Arnold. Come on,
right?
So dumb.
Right.
All right,
you know.
Here's I wrote. What is he saying? You guys can help me with this.
Marie, Marie, nice, nice.
What's he saying?
I don't even know who that is.
Steve Coogan.
He's saying marriage.
Marriage. That sounds like that. You're right.
Sounds exactly like that character.
You're right.
Oh my gosh. Good hit. Oh, this is a good hit. See, that sounded good.
There was some pretty good screams in this movie.
It sounds like someone taking a 2x4 and hitting a shower door with it.
Yeah, let me try that again. Yeah, it kind of does. But he just had a great screen. Scream, rather.
Scream.
What? Oh, lunch. Something about lunch.
I had to finish my lunch.
All right, there's that.
That was Kung Fu Panda all the way.
Totally. Noodle. We are noodle folk. All right, here's the thing about the stinky, what? Oh, about being a homeless stinky guy, and this features our cameo guy.
No, you stink.
All right, there's that.
You stink.
And then he says gibberish.
The Birdman is coming. He knew it.
Okay, so the Birdman, can you
explain? That's a callback.
There was a fun that was a
Schneider deal,
that was actually also a funny moment for me when he did it and he's talking about the Birdmen are coming.
Right.
But later in the movie there's another homeless guy.
Yeah.
The thing's crashing and the homeless guy goes, "The Birdmen," and I laughed because I thought, "Oh my gosh, all the homeless people in this world think that there are Birdmen coming." Mm-hmm. And it's not just Rob Schneider, it's all the homeless guys. Yeah. I love
that. That was really clever.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
That was subtle and made me laugh. Not that great, I wrote here.
But that is the Great Wall of China, sir.
It's not that great.
That's a pretty good line.
That was a really good line.
Not everything that came out of his mouth was just brilliant.
Yeah, he was pretty good. All right, what's this? Oh, getting thrown out.
Another one of those. Scott, I'm curious. Do you think in your life you've ever made that sound?
No. But it's
like, do you think you could, if I offered you money to go into a recording studio and make that sound with your vocal cords?
I probably could. I probably could.
That was Ewan Brenner, right?
Yeah. But I would just say.
Just the right amount of pressure placed in exactly the right place. Maybe a little bit of a twist. I bet we could get Scott to make that.
I bet I could do it. But if you fly out of a second story window, that's not the sound I'm making. I'm making a much more horrible, I'm going to die breaking all my
bones. There's expletives, too. Oh, shit!
Yeah, well, I would have swore like a sailor. But this guy does like goofy. It's like a goofy yell, sort of.
Yeah.
Like Goofy the dog, who also walks a dog. I don't want to blow your minds, but he walks Pluto. Here's a singing.
Just blew my mind.
I know, it's so freaky. Here's a singing the Slinky song. So the Slinky song, which we all know, is like an advent of the late 70s. It wasn't any, that song never existed in time. Right. But here's Jim Broadbent humming it anyway.
It's a telegram from General Fang, sir.
It's a fun for a girl.
You want a fun soundtrack? Buy this soundtrack. It's Slinky. Everybody all over the world, River of Dreams is a small world. I do not want, performed by Baha Men. Yes. I don't want any of these songs.
There's a Slinky cover song? Is that what you're telling me?
Or at least the original version of it or something.
Original from the commercials, I'm assuming.
No.
Let's not forget the original joke in this, which is that Phileas Fogg invented the Slinky in this movie, as far as this movie's concerned. And they made fun of him for it.
Yeah,
I thought the guy that went to the insane asylum in Venice. Thought somebody
was
else.
The guy, right, it was the guy who went to the insane asylum. They
Nonetheless, he trots out a Slinky and is like, "Look at this ridiculous waste of time." And you, the viewer, are going to go, "But I kind of like it."
Yeah, Slinkies are awesome.
I love it.
And the people
the
there
joke doesn't work.
It doesn't at all. It's a bad joke. It's not a good joke. This is a good line though.
Mumbling moron.
Some good stammering.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
That guy's got a second chin that knows no bounds.
It's like you want him to start going ribbit at some point and watching that thing like inflate.
It's incredible. That thing is incredible. It's just a beast of a thing.
It's a work of art.
He's still alive. He's still around. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you. Well, whatever. He's defying.
You store food in your pouch and you're good for 6 months of winter.
Expect a baby kangaroo to pop its head out of that thing.
No, nice.
Here's the queen, played by Kathy Bates, who wants to break your legs and keep you in a bed. All right, here you go.
The queen? Oh, the queen.
Okay, wait, that was the first part where he sees the queen. Here's the real queen.
So, Lord Kelvin, unsportsmanlike conduct, attempted murder, trading my arsenal for Buddhas.
Buddhas?
Buddhas.
Wow, it really doesn't sound like Kathy Bates. They're almost like they had somebody dub her voice because you couldn't do a believable accent.
Yeah. Well,
neither could Kathy Bates. I don't understand why that's just. It should have been someone older and more who looked more like Queen Victoria.
And here,
Dench or something.
I'm sure. Pretty sure Disney just went. Who do we have on payroll?
Yeah, right. Probably. Or who's in the studio right now making another Fried Green Tomatoes movie or something? So here's what there's my favorite trope. Not my favorite trope, but one that's on display in this movie, and it's one I can't stand. At the end of your movie set in a time period where royalty needs to be involved, they show up at the very end to send everybody off to their victory. That's not just the trope, though. It's always got to be some stunt acting. So it's like, hey, it's Men in Tights. Patrick Stewart's here at the end. Hey, it's Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Here's Sean Connery. Yeah, here's Sean Connery, everybody. Like, I hate that. And it happens a lot. It happens a lot where at the end, someone of the royal family needs to come in and go, now we can get everything back to normal and well done, everyone. And I hate that.
It does cheapen your movie. Yeah. It does kind of lampoons the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
And then someone will, like, they hugged her. That form of that happens in most of those too, where they're supposed to be a comedy. It's like, oh, you've overstepped your bounds, King Ralph. You're not supposed to hug the real queen. King Ralph. Remember King Ralph? Oh, man.
Well, man, I do. If we could get that on here, I would love that. The closest we can get is to 10 Cloverfield Lane, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the closest we can get. I'm sure there's no other John Goodman movies we can get as close to. That's hilarious.
Kingpin,
all right.
Maybe. Was on Netflix for a half a minute.
Yeah, for a hot half minute. Oh, look at this. It's the Film Sack Checklist, everybody. Here's what I've found. Fight, joke, and then fight, and then joke, check. All right? So that's a thing.
That's about right.
Knife in the butt, check, and nostril legs, check. Great.
Nostril legs, I like it.
Star Trek connections. I never heard from Daryl. I'm sure there are some in here. I don't know what they are. I should have said something before the show.
I actually had one. Hold on. I've already closed those notes. Give me a second.
Yeah. Oh, wait. No, you know what? He says he did reply. I just got the email and it says no connections, but he only searched for actors. He says there may be makeup or technical. But I swear there's an actor in here or somebody.
I heard that Patrick Stewart watched this and walked out on it.
Yeah, he probably did.
There you go.
Yeah. I'll bet the entire cast of Star Trek The Next Generation saw this movie and left. They all got out. What were they doing in 04? Oh, they were done with movies in 04, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
What was the last one? Nemesis would have been...
It might have been 2000.
No, that was earlier.
When was Nemesis?
Well, Nemesis was like 02, 03 maybe? Or maybe
it was pretty close,
maybe 01. It may have been 2001.
2002 was Nemesis.
Right, yeah. And it came out the weekend Two Towers did.
Right.
And that was a shit show for them. They ended up getting kicked right in the butt. That did not go well for the Star Trek cast. Anyway, we'll figure it out. Maybe there's somebody, maybe there's not. Let's move on to soundtrack. Great to give it a DAS for Disney as shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right down to the Baja Men.
Yep. A little too overwhelming, a little too much of
Let
it.
Let the dogs out.
Couldn't hum it back to you if I wanted to. Like, it's just plain and lame. By the way, so I was talking to Russell Brower yesterday for The Instance, and it was off air that we were talking about this, but he was talking about how music in movies has gotten really safe lately. And his example was this, and he showed me this video on YouTube about it, and it was really interesting. But if you walk up to anybody on the street and say, hey, hum something from Star Wars, and they immediately can go, burr, 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 you know, whatever you need them to do.
I said hum. Chill out, man.
Right? They can do whatever you need them to do. And if you say, well, give me something from James Bond, right? They can just do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you say hum anything from any of the Marvel movies, and you can't do it.
Yeah. Right,
none of
them,
even the ones you've seen over and over, you cannot think of
the only
that.
Ones. Yeah,
well,
the last time,
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, that's true. Yeah, but I think he's just counting scores. But even the Guardians of the Galaxy score, you can't do it.
Like, yeah, no.
And so his point was that they don't take any risks anymore to make them their own character, to give them
theme,
their own
right.
theme. Yeah. And he says that's really frustrating. He says John Williams still tries to do it in new things he does, but it just doesn't exist. And it blew my mind. I thought, you know what? He's right. I don't know a single tune. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you what the Thor theme sounds like.
Right.
All right. We got the best looking of the brothers. The other two are kind of scrubby looking.
I'll bet you every one of the Avengers and every one of the bad guys all have their own themes, and they're just sort of secreted in there.
Probably. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it's just because there's so much of it. That we just homogenize.
We listened to a lot of it for the Andrew Allen, the Secret Identity thing, right? Like we were listening to a lot of the soundtrack stuff and saying, all right, what's a good, like Captain America's theme, you'd recognize it if you heard it, because there is a very specific Captain America theme. And then the end stuff for Iron Man could be turned into a perfect Iron Man theme. As a matter of fact, I think it even borrows elements from the old cartoon.
Have we just not watched them enough times like we did?
No, because I remember coming home from Star Wars and going,
the first time.
Right.
I was 8 years old. And never forget.
And part the big reason for that is that theme is a theme in variations. If you're just listening to the movie, you're going to hear it 100 times. And that's what Russell's getting at about playing it safe, is they don't establish a theme and then bludgeon you with it ever. Mm-hmm. That's never happening in modern film.
Yeah, and he was talking about how they try really hard. The whole point of that is how they try not to do that with Warcraft, Diablo, like all of the core themes for all of the Blizzard games. He was he was saying they're all ones you can think of and remember. And if you played the games, you know the songs, you know the music, and you just don't know it for these movies and why. And it's because they're just not taking.
There are obviously exceptions, right? Like the Game of Thrones theme is something that you're never going to forget the rest of your life. But
TV themes are a different thing because you hear that every hour.
Right, you hear it over and over.
Right.
Especially if you binge.
I don't think you hear that do during the show. Like it's not used as like a, oh, here's the slow version as Jon Snow is sadly walking through.
sometimes you do. There are scenes in there, especially when they get triumphant toward the end of an episode where it's like, like they do it, but it's not.
It's not like the Brady Bunch.
I would sign up for a one man show of Scott Johnson does all the themes.
I would too. I just looked at my collection of Game of Thrones music, and it's 110 tracks.
Yeah, you gotta know some of those are various.
And what I'm getting at is it's more than just the main title that is memorable to me.
Yeah, there's the Jon Snow theme in particular is real. I couldn't hum it for you right now, so maybe that's a problem. But when I hear it, I always go, oh, this is good right here. It's like all snowy and northy. It's good.
Like, I completely agree with Russell. It's a few films in the last 15 years, like How to Train Your Dragon, where I'm like, oh, there is a memorable new theme written by a great composer.
That's a good one. And then, you know, you'll have like Terminator 2. Dun, 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 dun. Like,
I stand by my earlier statement.
Yes.
I love that stuff. And I don't do it anymore. I can't name a theme from a music or a movie recently at all. Like, for the last, I don't know. Mad Max, I can do.
Can you do Mad Max? Please do.
Could you have done it before you got the soundtrack afterwards?
I mean, in the Star Wars case, I think E.T. was very memorable out of the gate. Like, John Williams probably doesn't count because all his stuff's like that. Like, Jurassic Park was permanently burned into my head.
That's probably the last one that I remember that was just in my brain.
It's so good.
I remember coming out of Star Trek XI, the first new one with Chris Pine, and I had some theme that Michael Giacchino had written for this film, and it was not the Star Trek theme at all. It was a new thing, and it was in my head, and I remember I went and got the soundtrack because I wanted to hear more of that.
Yeah, that was really good. That was
doing Sabotage.
That was really good. Like, you were doing Sabotage over and over with a Nokia phone in your car? Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep.
But again, few and far between. This doesn't happen much.
Also, what am I trying to think of? The Star Trek First Contact had a it started at and then it went.
Yeah.
How does it go? It's this Goldsmith thing that is so good. It's I can't do it. I love it. I got too many themes in my head. About. In fact, here's that. Brian, somebody said we'd know Captain America. I'm going to play a little taste of it. Was that you, Abbott?
Yeah, it was me.
Just a little bit of it. Let's skip ahead. Wait. Yeah, see, that's pretty common. But you know, I don't hear any kids going.
And I think there are better examples of it in the soundtrack that it would take. Sadly, it would take a lot longer to find because it's like, is it in this one that's called Captain America's Rise, or is it this one called Captain America Stands Alone, or is it this one called
And the one I found is someone's lazy. They put in Captain America - theme - WMV. Change your titles.
Same thing. Like, I realized the second, third, and fourth Michael Bay Transformers films are garbage, but Steve Jablonsky checks in a couple of really memorable themes in Transformers, and you gotta recognize that's hard to do. You know,
you got to recognize,
you got to.
Hey, speaking of the new Transformers movie, I'm actually excited about this one. They're going back to the kid-centric.
You can have my seat.
Yeah, you can take mine. You can have my ticket, my seat, my everything.
I'm gonna spread out across both seats.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna spread out one for my popcorn tub.
Yeah. What would it say if the fifth Transformers film was great? What would it say?
He finally got it right. They finally just said, we don't even care anymore. Just do whatever you're gonna do.
I would love to be surprised. Wouldn't that be great?
Is it, but it, isn't it kind of like the Fast and the Furious? You're just like, I can't even imagine this being
but then it happens.
Winning Oscars.
But then it happens, though. Like, Fast and Furious is actually a great example. Up till 2 or 3, it was kind of shitty. And then suddenly it went, whoa, these movies are awesome. And I don't know what clicked. Something changed. I don't know if you can do that, Transformers. Maybe. But I love it when that happens. It's a rarity. But, like, for me, Mad Max, I love the old ones, too. So this is kind of a different kind of case. But Fury Road had no right to be so good as compared to its predecessors. And it was just like a whole new world of it. It was like, oh my gosh, fresh and new, let's go. And I didn't expect that going in. So maybe we'll get that one day with Transformers or Michael Bay in general. Maybe he'll blow our minds. And I doubt it, though. I mean, who are we kidding here?
Just kidding. I can't imagine.
The odds are against it. Yeah. However.
Well, and it's weird because you can imagine. So you could imagine an Indiana Jones movie that you love, a new Indiana Jones movie. You can totally imagine it working and and winning awards and so
all
on.
The things you want, right.
But Transformers, I just don't think it's possible.
Go to transformersmovie.com and tell me you're not amazed by mousing over top of Optimus Prime's face as he follows your mouse.
Yeah,
come on,
it's pretty awesome. I'm turned on just hearing you say it.
I honestly do not remember the last time I went to a movie's custom website. Like, maybe until 2000 was the last time.
Well, last time I went was Wraith the movie.
Yeah,
a few weeks
was
ago.
That the last one? Okay, yeah, and that's still out there. One. I can go see that if I want to see Wraith the movie.
Oh, yeah,
I have now gone. I've gone 15 years between being advertised to on a website by a movie, and you just broke my streak.
Yeah. Well done. Well done, Brian. Someone needed to.
Come on. That's pretty neat. Come on.
Let's see. Give me it. Where were we? I don't even know where we were. Talking about soundtracks. Oh my gosh, really? That's crazy.
Twitter post.
We got to get to the Twitter post now. Twitter post. Let's sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Around the world in 80 days. Oh, hey. You got your Steve Coogan and my Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah.
Huh. Tastes like pure sack.
Pure sack. How many exclamation marks were in that tweet?
Yeah.
A few. There was a few. But
I still get emails all the time saying I'm making a testicle reference when I name the show Film Sack. And I'm tired of explaining myself. It's just a cool sound. Like, we're sacking it. Yeah. Also, you could put movies in a sack.
And beat the sack. Crap out of it. That's how I think about
it. It's not all about balls.
And beat the crap out of it.
Yeah, when it's all about balls, that's on you, buddy. All right.
Yeah. Right. When you hear the name The Morning Stream and you're thinking urine, that's your problem.
That's on you, buddy. That's on you.
Sometimes the cigar is just a cigar.
We don't call this Film Scrote. We call it Film Sack.
Oh, now I regret not calling it Film Scrote.
Right.
Welcome to Film Scrote, everybody. Next up,
what are we scroting next week?
We're going to scrote something good. Brian Dunaway, yours, please.
Around the world in 80 days. Like taking a steamer to London, captained by a man with no nipples. Wear the rubber underpants.
See, what I thought of when I heard steamer. Different.
Yes. Yes, me too.
That's on me.
That's on you.
Yes. Exactly.
Sometimes like a train.
You should have just stopped with, like, taking a steamer.
No, this actually explains a lot. When I first heard the term Cleveland steamer, I thought it was a train in Cleveland. I really did.
Yeah, we were going to, we're taking a trip to Cleveland.
I think that's where it first happened.
Because we have one here. That's Glenn Peralta. No, I think I have a there's a one here called the Heber Creeper. Oh yeah, that's what it's called. The Heber Creeper. And out in Heber, Utah, it's kind of up past Park City. They have this train that does all this like stuff, and it's called the Heber Creeper. And that seemed normal. And I thought, oh, the Cleveland Steamer. That must be their version of the Heber Creeper. That's cool. You guys have your own train? Awesome. And then someone said, "No, that's when someone takes a dump on your chest."
When it
the Heber
slowly
Creeper does sound like a sexual fetish thing more than the Cleveland Steamer does.
The Creeper sounds like it's going to be slowly coming off your chest.
Yeah, or the guy up there is the Heber Creeper. There's a guy named.
Maybe
we got to watch
Purell after my Heber Creeper.
Yeah, we're at the all points bulletin out for the Heber Creeper. He struck again. It's like that. Anyway, now who do we have? Brian Ibbett.
Around the world in 80 days. How good can a movie be when it's actually a relief to see Rob Schneider about 3/4 of the way through?
Oh, thank God.
It's like a lifeline to you at the end of the movie.
Exactly. It's like, okay.
That's awesome. I
love
calming,
that.
Yeah, this movie's going to be okay now.
Yeah, it's going to be all right. Oh. He's back. It's you can do it, Brian. You can do it.
You can do it.
Here's the... Oh, look. Just handed to me. These right here. It's actually a bag of cough drops. Let's see. The alternate titles for this movie, Coughing Tiger, Dying Dragon, or Ameri-Chan History X.
Oh, wow. Boy. That was a reacher.
That was a real reacher.
Really,
it was a
good one.
Very good.
It was a Jack Reacher. We have an email from listener Doc Mysterio. He sent us an email to filmsack@gmail.com. That's also where you find folks can send your emails. And he says this. Just heard your FilmSack episode about Thinner. That was our last episode. And your discussion about gypsies compelled me to write. Like Scott, I grew up with the concept of gypsies being magic users who could curse others, read tarot cards, and look into crystal balls. My early exposure to gypsies, and Brian Ibbett is probably familiar with this, are the Vistani gypsies from the D&D adventure Ravenloft. I don't know. Do you know what that is?
I love Ravenloft. I played a great Ravenloft campaign. Totally forgot about it.
Were there gypsies in your campaign?
Yeah. Back, right. I mean, we're talking 20 years ago, but yes.
Yeah, it was a long time. He says, I even recalled old Dracula movies with the stereotypical gypsies dancing around a fire. So I may be, it may be an offensive term nowadays, but like a lot of older terms, it wasn't offensive back when we were growing up, and people need to stop losing their minds when an old term slips out in conversation. Anyway, thanks for the sacking, Doc Mysterio. I vote for Doc Mysterio as email of the week. I agree 100%.
No kidding. Absolutely.
Thank you for bringing much needed common sense to the table there, buddy, because I
agree. Losing your minds.
Yeah. Everyone needs to calm down. Quit losing their minds when old terms slip out in conversation. I feel like that'd be a good t-shirt or something.
It would, yes. It's
definitely a good way of life.
Well, and I thought we raised a really interesting question. We never asked it outright, but the question kind of becomes, okay, at what point in your history is it no longer acceptable? Like there's a time when everybody was saying, well, you know, that's grandpa. He still uses the N-word. But there has to be a point, right? Mm-hmm. Where everybody says, okay, even grandpa must stop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like grandpa was now born in 1951. He can't use that excuse anymore.
Yeah. He wasn't. I totally agree with this. I don't know what that is, but there should be a cutoff. I don't know where it is for gypsies. That's the problem. Like the gypsies thing is so, it's still, I guarantee there are little kids whose exposure to the concept of quote unquote gypsies is magical. Beings who can talk to the dead and raise you up on your chair or whatever. just slip that in there.
Wow.
But you know
what's
what I
the
mean?
Cutoff date again, Randy?
Like that feels.
I don't know. But,
that feels like, you know, it's like Alibaba and the 40 Thieves. Is that offensive? I don't know. It might be. Is it in today's context with where, you know, when there was all like stuff before Islam?
Let's face it.
I don't know.
If you live long enough, you're going to be offensive.
Yeah,
at least the way this world is headed.
That's a pretty good way.
I've been asking that a lot. Like, yes, your thinking ossifies as you get older, and one day you're going to be an old man who is considered uncouth. But on what point? Like, what'll be the thing that people just they will not accept about you 30 years from now?
When I say, I use the term "dirty millennials" a lot, and at some point, that's going to start rubbing everybody up the wrong tree. But I do it as a pure joke, right? Like, I just think it's funny. Technically, my oldest daughter is in that age group. So it's like, it's not like
funny at 40, not so funny at 80.
Yeah. But then again, like when my grandpa, he used to throw the term, and I'm going to use this in the context in which it's given everybody. So calm yourselves down. But he was in World War II and he referred to Japanese people as Japs all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I don't see how that's offensive, but I'm sure somebody used it offensively.
My grandfather used much more offensive terms.
Right,
Japs.
Right. But he could never. My point is, he never got rid of it. He never got rid of it. So if there are people right now who are using horribly offensive terms, let's say about Middle Easterners, simply because they were in New York on the day the towers fell, let's say, they're going to have that with them probably till they're done. You know what I mean? Like they're going to still be, they're going to still call somebody a towelhead at 80. And you're going to be Grandpa, shit, Grandpa, whoa, easy there. Back in my day, I pick up my iPhone. You know, they're going to be talking about like today.
I'd Instagram pictures of towel people all the time.
Anyway, I don't know. These are the societal issues that we try to tackle here on FilmSack each and every week. So.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
So thank you, Doc Mysterio, for bringing this one up again. Our next film is going to be, I don't know. What is it? I wish I knew.
I give up.
It's not called
Around the World in
Less time and around the world. Never watched this movie.
Less time to get around the world.
Hold on. I'm going to find it. It is going to be, here it is, FilmSack. Our next film is... Firefox with Clint Eastwood.
Oh, is that one of our? That's a classic.
That's a disc deal.
Hammond Chamberlain sent this, or gave this to us at Nerdtacular a couple years back.
Yeah, we've had this one requested for years.
We're finally getting to these discs, you guys. We are actually getting to them.
And this is not the browser, so don't go look at the browser and think you know what we're talking about. It's the movie.
Yeah, it might actually be streaming now. I don't know.
You could watch it on your browser, on your Firefox browser.
Right.
Yeah, that's
1982's Firefox, where experimental aircraft. Clint Eastwood, is that right?
Yep. It's this experimental. You know what? It is not streaming, but is rentable on Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, Vudu, everywhere, PlayStation, anywhere you get your movies. For $3,
right.
You'll be sitting pretty with Firefox from 1982. It is, it's an experimental stealth aircraft, and he has to pilot it. And I've seen this movie like 5 times. I don't know why.
Right. I've seen it over the days myself, and I think somewhere along the line, didn't somebody fall and hit their head and break their neck?
Oh,
no, that was.
I don't know, dude.
Oh wow.
No, that was $1 Million Baby.
Oh.
No, I'm sad.
Now I'm sad.
Now you're going to need that medication Brian said, Randy talked about to get over it. All right. Well, I'm sorry to bring this in here. Breaking news. Don't do a search for Natalie Denise Spurl. She was the pretty lady in San Francisco. Listed as stunning woman. Do not look up her image search because she went on to do other things, and they're
she
not.
She was, but I'm guessing the less savory of variety.
Yeah, movies.
Did she appear in some of those French and Belgian women with Cécile de France?
None of those, but she's in movies called The Bardo Blues, a directed DVD, unrated. Basically, she's in the softcore porn industry, is where she's.
Mm-hmm. Do you have safe search turned off, Scott?
Succubus. I do.
I thought you was telling Randy what to do.
Right. So
I don't actually know how you do that anymore. Where do you turn that off now? Because it used to be a thing right on the search page, and it's not there now. Oh no, there it is.
Too much hassle.
Yeah, too much hassle.
Just look at the porn, Scott. Just be.
She's a very naked person in life. It looks like so.
She's very naked most
days.
Just a warning.
Yeah, she's naked most days, like a lot of us. You know, we're all naked at least once a day.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are anyway. I don't know about everybody.
Unless we're never nudes.
Yeah, we may be never nudes. I'm wearing. I like to wear an ace bandage wrapped around my junk all the time. So. all right. That's our next movie. It's Firefox.
Tune in next week when we watch. Natalie Spurl in Maisie Undercover, Co-Ed Desires.
Co-Ed Desires, nice. Yeah. Sounds all right. And then also
Firefox
is what we're doing. FilmSack.com is the website. You can go there on the frequent talk on the blog.
The website.
And you can email us again, FilmSack@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at FilmSack. You can leave us reviews on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps us in great ways. It helps us move up the charts and stay prominent in the film sections of these services. So go do that. That would be lovely. That is going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time.
We.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Yeah.
That's it.